The American Broadcasting Company and its affiliated stations present Headline Edition with David Grant. From all over the world, wherever the day's headlines are made, Headline Edition brings you accurate, timely reports on the news behind those headlines, plus informative in-person interviews with men and women who made the headlines today. Today's edition presents an on-the-scene report from Lake Success on today's heated session of the UN Security Council. A special report from Paris on the first meeting of the Big Three foreign ministers. Dave Evans, who helped develop a new radar warning device for airplanes. Miss Jeanette Van Orbeek, 18-year-old Girl Scout from Belgium. And a report on presidential succession legislation. To stay in step with history in the making, stay tuned to Headline Edition. Now here's Taylor Grant.
This is Taylor Grant again. Before going on with the news, I want to express my sincere gratitude to Gordon Fraser and Les Griffith for their excellent efforts on my behalf during the 4 weeks' absence. It's good to be back on the Headline Edition. In Washington, the State Department announced today that we were selling Generalissimo Chiang Kai-shek's army 130 million bullets to fight the communists in Manchuria and North China. Former U.S. Supreme Court Justice Owen J. Roberts told a congressional committee that the United States was in great danger at the moment. Far greater danger, he said, than in the few years before 1941. The U.N., said Roberts, is too weak to maintain peace in the foreseeable future. At Lake Success, debate began today on the lengthy report of the U.N. Commission that investigated Balkan situation. And Warren R. Austin, chief U.S. delegate, voiced some strong statements regarding Greece and its surrounding countries. Pauline Frederick has been at Lake Success since the debates began, reports the full story now.
Today, the Security Council took up a matter that may mean success or doom for the United Nations. It was a report of the Council's first investigating committee, the Balkan report, which, with Russia and Poland dissenting, blames Yugoslavia, Bulgaria, and Albania for helping the guerrilla war in Greece. But beneath the surface of the debate that began today and will go on to success or veto, a broader issue lies. It's whether communism is to be allowed to spread in the Balkans. Delegate Warren Austin placed a big American stamp of approval on the report, and he did so in such straightforward language as I have never heard before in this chamber. He warned the Council, "The future of the United Nations and the peace of the world require that the United Nations take effective action to put an end to violations of Greece's northern border." He said the report showed that Yugoslavia, Bulgaria, and Albania have violated the most important basic principles of the United Nations. If these acts continue, Mr. Austin declared, and if specific means of settlement, such as suggested by the committee and provided for by the charter, fail, the United Nations must resort to force. Albania and Bulgaria today denied the charges against them. The next week, Yugoslavia will take the defensive. But the real issue, the issue between East and West, will be joined when Soviet delegate Gromyko hunches over his microphone and begins to speak to the Council about the report. The only thing you could say to reporters today when Ambassador Austin laid down the challenge was, "I have nothing to say for the time being." Now back to Taylor Grant.
The economic future of Europe is at stake in Paris tonight. There, the foreign ministers of Britain, France, and Russia have held their first meeting to draft a common response to the United States' plan for reconstruction of Europe with American assistance. Bob Sturdivant reports the details from Paris.
The temperature was 100 degrees in the shade outside the French Foreign Ministry this afternoon as the foreign ministers of the Britain, France, and Russia gathered for the Big Three conference. It was even hotter on the second floor, in the parrot room of the ministry, where the wine-colored conference table awaited Molotov, Bevin, and Bidault under a battery of scorching Klieg lights. When the photographers had finished, a curtain of silence dropped around the conferees. A spokesman said later there might be no official news until the meeting ends. Nobody knows just when. This first session lasted 4 hours. In it, the three big European powers took the first steps towards implementing the proposal of Secretary of State George Marshall for American aid to an economically united Europe. Behind the blackout of news were strong indications that a lot of ground was covered, but no decisions taken. Big Ernest Bevin, the British Foreign Secretary, was the first to arrive at the Quai d'Orsay, exactly 5 minutes before the scheduled conference hour. Soviet Foreign Minister Molotov was 5 minutes late. His sizable delegation purred into the courtyard of the ministry in three American-made limousines flying the red flag. Molotov wore a gray felt hat and a blue business suit and looked uncomfortably hot. He mounted the steps briskly, disappeared into the ornate interior, and a few minutes later, the Paris Big Three conference was underway. This is Robert Sturdivant in Paris, and now back to Taylor Grant in New York.
High winds and heavy rains hit the flood-stricken Midwest today. A tornado struck the town of Harvey, Missouri, 180 miles south of St. Louis. First reports said no one was hurt. Meanwhile, the rain-swollen rivers in Missouri, Iowa, Illinois, and Nebraska are rolling on to near record crests. 4,000 persons have evacuated homes in the St. Louis area. And to the south, more than 1,000 men are working to strengthen a levee that is threatened by the steadily rising Mississippi. In the auto industry, a General Motors official predicted today that a complete shutdown will take place if the soft coal miners do not return after their 10-day vacation ends on July 8th. U.S. Steel's biggest subsidiary has curtailed operations in the Pittsburgh district to less than half of capacity. The special committee appointed by President Truman to ensure safety on the world's giant silver airliners witnessed a special demonstration today of a new device. Device that employs radar to flash a warning signal to the pilot at the approach of danger. Dave Evans, electronic expert, has developed this new device and he is interviewed in Washington by Jack Bell.
Mr. Evans, you have been demonstrating the Howard Hughes radar warning device for airplanes to various government groups at National Airport today. What is the general nature of the device?
Howard Hughes radar is actually the first peacetime airline application of wartime radar. The instrument warns the pilot the instant the airplane comes too close to the ground or buildings, mountains, and obstacles of that type. It flashes a brilliant red light and rings a bell. It works in the dark and regardless of weather conditions.
Well, Mr. Evans, what does the pilot do when he gets the warning?
He instantly starts the plane into a simple climb without turning, according to procedure known as the Hughes anti-collision method of flying.
Do you think this should prevent the too frequent cases of planes flying into mountains?
A survey has been made of terrain contours in the vicinity of principal air routes, those that pass over mountainous territory. That survey shows that the Hughes method of flying, coupled with the use of the Hughes radar, is capable of preventing 96% of the accidents in which a plane flies into a mountain.
What about the size, weight, and cost of the device?
It is about the size of a shoebox and weighs only 15 pounds compared to as much as 700 pounds for wartime radar. It costs about $130.
Well, that's phenomenal. Is the device generally available now?
Howard Hughes has announced that he is making it available to all U.S. airlines at cost as soon as TWA, of which he is the principal stockholder, is equipped. After that, it will be available to anyone with an airplane.
Thank you very much, Mr. Evans. Now back to Taylor Grant in New York.
In just 2 days, the first international meeting of Girl Scouts to be held in this country in 10 years will officially open at Barre, Pennsylvania. Its purpose, to encourage the girls of the world to know and understand each other better, that understanding may become a cornerstone in the building of lasting peace. 73 of these girls will represent the American contingent, one for each state and one for each U.S. territory. 21 other nations are to be represented. The microphone now is Miss Jeanette Van Orbeek from Ghent, Belgium, 18 years of age, but representing 14,000 girl guides, as the scouts are called, in Belgium. Jeanette, we're happy to have you with us, and tell us, what are some of the most interesting things you've been doing since you arrived in New York 10 days ago?
I have had a sighting around New York who was very interesting. I have been in Times Square, Fifth Avenue, Coney Island, and I have seen quite a lot of big stores.
Well, during this short visit, have you found the young people of this country very different from your friends at home?
They are different of the Belgian young people, and I think the great reason of that is because the young, the boys and girls have haven't got to school together.
I see. In Belgium, they don't go to school together.
No.
There's no co-education
system. No.
I see. Well, now, Jeanette, I understand that the theme of this international meeting that's to take place in a couple of days is Friendship Builds a Better World. We'd like to have your thoughts on that before you leave. Just what role do you feel the Girl Scouts can play in establishing lasting peace?
Well, I think as a guide, it's a friend of everybody and a sister of every other Girl Scout. She tries to understand every other Girl Scout, and she tries to understand the custom of every other country. And I think that's a great reason of her friendship and the next peace.
I see. That, I believe, is the fourth Girl Scout law, isn't it? That a Girl Scout is a friend to all and a sister to every other Girl Scout?
Yes, it is.
See, my daughter's a Girl Scout. She told me. Thank you very much, Jeanette. I'm sure that Belgium and the international meeting will be proud. Thanks a lot. More news in a moment.
Headline Edition presents headlines of the past. Today is the 67th birthday of Helen Keller, the educator of the blind. On June 27, 1847, Boston and New York City were connected by telegraph. On this date in 1941, Great Britain adopted the letter V as the symbol of victory. 3 years ago today, the liberated city of Cherbourg was returned to French authorities. On this date in 1945, General Douglas MacArthur announced that U.S. Army troops were advancing on Luzon. And exactly 12 months ago, President Truman signed a bill for $7 billion to make up a deficit in teacher salaries. Those are the June 27th headlines of the past. Now for more headline news of today, back to Taylor Grant.
The Senate today passed legislation to place the Speaker of the House next in line for the presidency in the absence of the Vice President. John Edwards reports the details from Washington.
This bill, which is expected to become law soon, makes House Speaker Joe Martin next in line for the presidency, then the President of the Senate, Senator Vandenberg, then the Cabinet officers, beginning with Secretary of State Marshall. The present laws make the Secretary of State next in line. There have been 7 times in American history where a vice president has moved into the White House on the death of a president, but none where a Secretary of State has moved up. But it could happen. It's been said that the next man is only a heartbeat away. Harry Truman himself proposed this plan and reasoned that the next in line should not be an appointive official like a member of the cabinet, but an elective official since, theoretically, he would be more responsive to the will of the people. Many presidential succession plans have been proposed through the years. There are pro and con arguments for each. One complication on this latest one is that the House Speaker was a Democrat when Mr. Truman first suggested the plan. Now he's a Republican. So it could happen someday that one political party could succeed another in the White House without a national election. Now back to Taylor Grant in New York.
Today's Major League Baseball scores. In the National League, Pittsburgh 12, Chicago 8. In the American League, Washington 3, Boston nothing. Now the closing Dow Jones stock averages. Industrials off 0.02, rails up 0.04, utilities off 0.02. Here are other headlines of the day. CIO President Philip Murray says the CIO Executive Board has rejected any idea of a general strike to protest the Taft-Hartley Labor Act. The AFL had previously rejected the suggestion of a general strike. And the president of the International Teamsters Union, Dan Tobin, says he thinks anyone who advocates a general strike is an enemy of organized labor and the nation. The Los Angeles District Attorney's Office says it has some valuable information which may lead to the apprehension of the murderer of Benjamin Bugsy Siegel. The source is Mrs. Esther Siegel, the divorced wife. Senate appropriation leaders have agreed to give the State Department an additional $400,000 to continue the Voice of America broadcasts. And that's today's Headline Edition.
Tune in Monday at the same time for Headline Edition. You'll hear important reports from the names who make the news and vivid on-the-scene descriptions from the places where it's made. Headline Edition is edited by Taylor Grant, directed by Charles Harrell. Irma Davis' famous news commentary will be heard immediately following station identification. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.